Our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we. They formed 13 small colonies into a great and growing nation of more than 300 people.
Whether long-range weapon or suicide bomb, a wicked mind is a weapon of mass destruction. Whether your solar wave sun or BBC One, misinformation is a weapon of mass
destruction. AM 950 Progressive Voice, Minnesota, and welcome to the debut new program for this 7 o'clock hour, as well as being a podcast, broadcast, hybrid. This is Hunter Hawes and Eric Nelson.
Hell yeah.
A weekend chance to get it fixed, but fellas, we've had a lot of trouble naming this program.
Yeah,
we've had
more than a month now. We've been debating.
It's been almost 2 months, and we were leaning towards prosecute the Bush administration for war crimes. That was what really stuck out to me. I really liked it a lot, but that is a mouthful. So Eric actually came up with kind of a good.
It's a compromise.
It's a compromise. It's a interim plan for right.
It seems more playful.
Yeah.
I don't want the show to be extremely dour all the time, although I'm going to talk about deep adaptation during this episode. I think that it's a good way to reference the failures of the Bush administration while still being kind of tongue-in-cheek.
I do, too. So, why don't you unveil our temporary name?
Our interim name and possibly final name will be the Mission Accomplishers.
Mission accomplished, baby. We are the Mission Accomplishers.
I know the human being and fish can coexist peacefully.
Here with you, 7 p.m. Saturday nights on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, in the Twin Cities, and available all around the globe.
24/7. Hunter's phone number, his personal phone number is, let me get this,
952-946-6205.
Yeah, that's, he lives at the station, folks.
Go ahead, call it whenever you want. Leave me a message. I'll maybe answer if I'm here. But yeah, so debut show.
We're not live at the moment, but I think we plan on doing some live shows later on.
Yes, that will be a something to happen in the future, some Saturday night live programming here.
How call-ins will work, I'm not exactly sure right now, but we'll figure it out.
Yeah, so on Thursday, I went over some of the names that I struggled with, and I'm not going to go through them all again, but my favorite was Tina Smith and Wesson. I thought that was a classic. And then I like Ilhan Solo, or the Alex Jonestown Massacre, or even Bernie Flanders. That's cute.
Bernie Flanders is a funny name.
And it's super easy to put Ned Flanders' glasses and mustache on Bernie Sanders, and it looks good. So that would have worked. But most of this garbage we can just throw out now.
Was that your show notes?
Those are my names for the show.
Okay.
There's my Space Force. There's Ted Cruz in USA. Yeah. Fun game.
Do we need to spend more time on these tapes?
Or the David Miss Pac-Man show. Because like I said, you name a place with a Miss Pac-Man machine, I'll set the high score on it. Just go ahead. Call a station, 952-946-6205, or comment at AM950. Tell me a Miss Pac-Man machine, and I will go set the high score.
You know what really irritates me about those old arcade cabinets? And it's not necessarily the fault of the cabinet itself. It's that anyone who runs those unplugs them. And when they unplug them, it deletes all of the high scores.
Yeah.
There's very few places.
Classic Seinfeld.
There's very few places that have high score that's kept over long periods of time.
Yeah. One of my proudest accomplishments was setting the high score at the Minnesota State Fair Miss Pac-Man machine, because that's where the greats go. They go to the State Fair.
Is that a thing?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That was a hard one to set, but I did it. That took about 2 days, actually, so that was one of my biggest struggles in setting a high score, but I got it, baby. I am the greatest.
Have you ever seen the documentary King of Kong?
Oh, yeah. That's a great documentary.
That is.
Yeah, I love documentaries on subjects like that.
Especially
just a very small, very specific subject that you can actually make into an interesting movie. They did it phenomenally with that one.
Yeah, when there's a niche that people are all very into, it's a small community, but the community is extremely into what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's always fascinating, especially when you have characters like Steve Wiebe.
Yes.
And
Billy Mays. And he got arrested for something. I don't remember what it was, but I believe he's in jail now. Or
oh, is he?
He got in trouble, at least.
I know he got a lot of his high scores taken off of the Twin Galaxies.
Yep. They banned him from that. Big news of the week was R. Kelly. R. Kelly's in a lot of trouble. A documentary came out fairly recently of a bunch of women who have accused him of, I don't know, there's a lot of accusations, but basically being a cult leader and trapping girls, keeping them against their will in his house, and doing a ton of vile, sexual, horrible things to them. And this is...
Without consent.
And very young girls, like...
underage.
Yeah, teenagers. And R. Kelly had been in trouble. He beat, actually, a child pornography charge in 2008.
Was that related to the notorious urinating on a girl charge?
No, that's separate.
Or is that a separate thing?
The man has a long rap sheet, but has not gotten in trouble.
These are not new allegations, really. Yeah. Or these ones specifically might be.
These are all post-2008, so it's when he should have learned his lesson. But what I wanted to get to was he did an interview shortly after being released from jail. And here, I'll play how that interview went.
Robert, stop it. Y'all quit playing. Quit playing. Robert. I didn't do this stuff. This is not me. Y'all, I'm fighting for my life. Y'all killing me with this. I gave y'all 30 years of my career.
Robert.
30 years of my career. Y'all trying to kill me. You're killing me, man. This is not about music. I'm trying to have a relationship with my kids, and I can't do it. Y'all just don't want to believe the truth. You don't want to believe it.
My initial reaction is that is exactly how a manipulative cult leader would behave in a public interview. I mean, there's clear trying to manipulate what's going on.
Emotionally manipulative behavior.
He also is towering over the lady giving the interview, and, like, pointing at her and then staring right into the camera as he's doing this. It looks like his Trapped in the Closet performances, actually. Just the setup. This whole thing is bizarre, but it looks like a performance. This does not look like sincere feelings to it, and not how someone should act.
So that was the first time hearing it, personally. It sounded sincere. That wouldn't make any of it better, but...
I mean, and that happened to get set off that quickly, when this is something you've been processing for a long time. I just don't see how that would be a true emotional reaction to... They were very softball questions she was asking, too. Are the allegations true? And he would go off on these.
And when he goes into that interview, what was his perception of what it was going to address?
Well,
How would he not expect that?
He wanted to tell his side of the story.
Okay.
And so he had just gotten out of jail, and then the day after this interview took place, he's back in jail now. So he had a hard time coughing up the bail to get out. He apparently has serious financial troubles, but he came up with $1 million or whatever it was to get out of jail, but then just got thrown back in because he has back child support. So now he's in jail for that. So R. Kelly, that's... not looking good for him, and I mean, good riddance. Seems like a piece of garbage.
Yeah, there's no shortage of allegations against him back 15 years.
I mean, this would be a lot of things to have to overcome. A lot of people would have to be in place lying. And I mean, where is anyone's incentive in doing this?
Yeah, I don't think most of them are suing him. They're filing criminal complaints.
Mm-hmm. And this all came up because of that documentary, and the documentary shows just how there's dozens, I mean, almost 100 people. Probably not that high, but there's a lot of young women and their parents that are coming forward and, like, proving all the claims true in their own life, or how what they went through with their child separated from them. So
when they were engaged in his sex cults,
when they'd get abduct. He'd promise things like that, that he would make these girls famous, take them on tour. So a lot of them were like aspiring musicians, and he'd take them in, and then they wouldn't be able to leave.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
Did you ever see the interview from GQ, maybe Dave Hirth? He asked him if he was familiar with the Dave Chappelle skit.
Yeah.
And R. Kelly was pretending to not know who Dave Chappelle is. It's very funny. So, who? Dave? No, what Dave, what did you say? Dave Chappelle? Not familiar. I mean, at this point, who's not familiar with Dave Chappelle?
Yeah, I know, one of the most successful comedians around. And rightfully so. He's hilarious. He's just funny, talking, presenting anything. The guy can make you laugh.
Yeah, just speaking off the cuff.
The trouble with Dave Chappelle ran into is that a lot of the Chappelle show got interpreted by, like, racist white kids and then played into negative stereotypes. And then that's actually why he ended the show. The story I heard him give of why he canceled the show was he was doing one of these racial skits, and then a white audience member was laughing a bit too hard for his taste, and he was just looking at the guy, and he goes, man, I'm doing something wrong here.
Yeah, and I have personal experience, not with the Chappelle show, but are you familiar with the cartoon The Boondocks? It was on Adult Swim.
Oh, yeah.
I remember meeting someone in college, and he's like, oh, have you seen the show? Mm-hmm. It's so funny, dude. It's mm-hmm. so funny. It's so racist.
Yeah.
It just rips on black people. And it's like, I don't think you understand what it's about.
The shows aren't meant for that, and it's people laughing at the wrong things in
there. Yeah.
So I remember that, though, because Dave Chappelle then, he went, he kind of flew off the radar for several years and only recently has came back into the spotlight, because he really went into hiding after ending that show, and he was contractually obligated to continue it, but just left and dealt with the consequences of
that. Yeah, I guess that says a lot about his character that he's willing to give up however much it was, dozens of millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was like the most popular show on Comedy Central at the
time. Yeah, in my mind, it might be the best sketch comedy show ever.
Yeah, Chappelle's good. Mad TV was good.
Mad TV is great, yeah. Key and Peele, I liked a lot. Whitest Kids You Know?
All That Was Good When We Were Kids.
Sure.
It was.
I know, I'm agreeing with you.
It was like Saturday Night Live for Nickelodeon.
Mm-hmm. I know you're a fan of the Whitest Kids You Know skit with the tattoo.
Yeah
the Bowser tattoo.
It's okay, so there's this picture of a tattoo someone got, and it's got picture of Bowser from Mario Brothers. He's wearing sunglasses and he's on a surfboard and he's shredding a double neck guitar, and all this is in front of a weed leaf, and then behind the weed leaf is a giant cross, like Christian cross, and it's the most ridiculous thing ever, like a combination of things, and how someone got that tattooed on them, and they made an entire skit about it. And
are you sure?
Oh my god, I laughed so hard at not only the picture but then the skit afterwards. Like, it was for days where just thinking of that, and I would crack up wherever I was.
Are you sure that the tattoo didn't come after the skit was made?
No. The skit was made because of the tattoo.
Oh, it was inspired by the tattoo. You're not making note of the funniest aspect of the tattoo.
What did I forget?
Happy birthday, Rick.
Oh, yeah, and it all says happy birthday, Rick.
Because his friend Rick's birthday is next week.
Oh, my God, that was super funny.
Mm-hmm. I encourage any listeners to look it up.
So, rapping fentanyl spray mascot star of drug company trial. So a pharmaceutical company accused of racketeering made an in-house rap video that featured ASAP Rocky's beats and a rhyming bottle of fentanyl.
What are they thinking when they do this? That this will come across well?
Yeah, and then I got it right here. Listen to how this goes. I believe it's the pharmaceutical company.
Well, titration is a technique to distribute the drug.
You're right.
A, B, and Z, real back again. 2015, let me begin. Insys Therapeutics, that is our name. We're raising the bar and we're changing the game. To be great, it takes
a decision. All right, we don't need much of that. Yeah. Well, first of all,
it's first of all, can I say, it slaps. They've got bars. So, they've won me over on that count.
Mm. Also, so there's a dancing bottle of fentanyl in the video, and the costume is labeled predominantly with the drug's maximum dose of 1,600 micrograms. But come on, really? Who thought this was a good idea? Who okayed this as a company idea? Something to pursue, to make the they have a music video for it.
Who's working there going, you know how we're surrounded with controversy of marketing our pharmaceuticals to people abusing them? Let's make a rap video about it.
It's clearly, these two guys, they're living out their dream.
Because isn't fentanyl basically people who are in stage 4 cancer?
Yeah, this is, fentanyl is something that you would never need to market. This is fentanyl. It's never up to the patient that they should be taking it. I've talked about that before.
It's people with terminal cancer.
The doctor will tell you when you need that. You're not making the call on the fentanyl. So, oh my God.
I can't mention the market for fentanyl either.
I mean, the company had to design and make this costume. They don't sell fentanyl costumes.
That's true. Maybe they do. Who knows? It's a big hit on Halloween.
But, yeah. And then they got A$AP Rocky as the beat.
Did he sign off on allowing his beat to be used for pharmaceutical advertisements? Maybe he didn't know what it was going to be used for. I don't know.
I remember one time I went to an A$AP Rocky album release in a record store in Harlem. And I wrote my name and my girlfriend's name for the tickets. But then she couldn't go. She had to work. And I went alone. And then he gave away like this fan package with like headphones and the album and all these goodies. And it was her name that won. And then I'm like, oh, and tried to claim it. And he goes, you're not Annie. And I go, well, that's my girlfriend. He goes, she ain't here. You're not getting it. So I
think there might have been fentanyl in that pack.
Ooh. Eric, you got anything?
As I mentioned earlier, are you familiar with the paper Deep Adaptation?
No, bring me up to
speed. I think it was published a couple months ago. Or actually, it wasn't published. So if you're ready to bring this podcast down like 20 levels into the pit of despair, get ready.
I'm always ready to do that. Right. It's great radio.
Well, this was a academic paper that was written and submitted to a number of different scientific journals who refused to publish it, not because of any issues with the science behind it, just that they said it would be irresponsible to subject the public to such depressing news or hopeless perspectives. The idea behind deep adaptation is that climate change has reached a point of no return.
Oh, yeah.
That no matter what we do at this point, the Earth is doomed to be uninhabitable in the near future.
Mm-hmm.
And deep adaptation is mainly addressing how do we as a species come to terms with our near extinction.
Jeez, yeah. You're lying.
Yeah, it's a pretty depressing paper, and I kind of understand why these journals didn't want to publish it. It goes over a lot of things that you wouldn't even consider. Like, have you talked to your family about how you all feel about cannibalism?
Oh my God.
About killing another human to protect your resources. And then bigger issues that maybe the government would have to address. Because we are finally falling into despair. Society has crumbled. Do we need something in place to shut down the nuclear reactors and deal with the waste so that whatever intelligent species comes after us won't have to deal with the mess we've created?
Oh my God.
Yeah, it is very depressing. It is a very much a turn off the lights on your way out way of looking at the world.
And so, wait, now why'd you bring this up? Just because of the paper or did something happen with it?
Just because of the paper. Yeah. Although a new book was recently released called Uninhabitable, which kind of addresses the same idea. It's not as depressing, but it's along the same vein.
So how is this getting shared right now? Like, how are people getting made aware of the original paper?
There's a number of news articles about it. I saw something in Business Insider, which is what led me to looking it up.
Uh-huh.
I think Vice might have done an article fairly recently about it. I don't think it was ever peer-reviewed because a journal never intended to publish it.
Now, what's your thoughts on it?
A guy, I think his name is Jem Bendel, and he has a number of YouTube videos kind of addressing it. What's funny is, along with the paper, there's all these hotlines. This will maybe mentally affect you.
What kind of hotlines? Like suicide hotlines?
Essentially, yeah, and coping hotlines, how to deal with probably the same kind of things that people, when they get a terminal diagnosis, coming to terms with your near death.
So what's your take on it? You read it?
Yeah, I read it. I would encourage everyone who thinks they can mentally sustain something like that to read it. So often when I try to stress the importance of us making drastic changes to our lifestyles to address climate change, people will act as if it's overreaction, where I don't think they've even comprehended the possible outcomes of this.
Yeah.
Where the worst case scenario is near future collapse.
And I wonder which way is more effective? Is it having people read this, or will people see this as like hogwash?
I can tell you right now that our current strategy has not been very effective.
That's true.
Things as marginal or moderate as the Paris Accords, the news is dropping out. And even if you stuck to the Paris Accords 100%, it wouldn't be enough to address the increasing rate of climate change.
Yeah. Huh.
So when they talk about humans are going to have to, we're going to have to stop eating beef, first of all.
And then why is
people
that?
People are unhappy with it, but that's a fact.
And why specifically?
Well, there's a number of reasons. It's incredibly resource intensive to generate beef. You know, all the fresh water it requires, all the land it requires, the processing, storage. And on top of that, cows produce methane, which is a extremely potent, what is the word I'm looking for, greenhouse gas.
Yeah, I think that's the angle to not focus on is the cow farts, because then everyone gets hung up on that as it's ridiculous, even though it's true. I think it's the resources required to be able to serve beef to how many millions and billions of people.
And even if
not
you don't,
being feasible,
even if you don't have this apocalyptic outlook, you still have to recognize the lifestyle of Americans is not sustainable for the rest of the world.
Oh,
the only
yeah.
reason we're able to live like this is because a sizable chunk of the world's population is living in utter despair.
And that's the thing that most people don't, they don't frame it that way or think about the rest of the world in context of how our exploitation is creating our comfortable way of living.
Yeah.
I mean, even with...
Americans treat fresh water as if it's unlimited. Think about other places in the country like California, LA, which is built on a desert.
111 degrees? Phoenix can't really be that hot, can it? Oh my God, it's like standing on the sun!
This city should not exist. It is a monument to man's arrogance.
Yeah,
Las Vegas.
Well, they already go through water, like droughts where you can't use water to a certain extent.
Yeah, I mean, they've basically been just pulling all their water out of natural aquifers that had built up over thousands of years.
Yeah.
And they've almost completely ran it dry in a couple years.
Like Saudi Arabia, they have those plants to distill salt water so it's fresh water.
Yeah, that does work. However, it's extremely energy inefficient.
Yeah.
So I'm sure they're running power plants on oil and coal that is generating huge amounts of pollution.
And when this reality sets in, that won't be a reality to use. I mean,
it
you just got
option,
further
yeah.
to the problem then. So even though water is of the utmost priority, it wouldn't be an option to even do that at that point.
Yeah, and I think it might be an option for drinking water, but they're going to have to adjust their lifestyle where, no, you can't have a lush green golf course in the middle of the desert where it hasn't rained in 100 years.
Yeah. Yeah, climate change eventually is going to change our way of living. And there's no stopping it. It's going to occur at some point that the world's going to be drastically different because of this.
And we've talked about
looking back, it'll be so frustrating of people who were trying to address it or things like the Green New Deal. And look at all the many benefits you would receive from starting that process and just The way to create jobs through the Green New Deal, not protecting mining jobs. And there's even far more jobs in the Green New Deal type thing. But if none of that goes through and we get to this point and look back at civilization as like, oh my God, look at how stupid you were.
Yeah, and even the Green New Deal doesn't go far enough. However, mm-hmm. it's better than what we've tried so far. But
I'd say it's the best plan with the most
popular support.
Yeah. So it's definitely where energy should lie right now mm-hmm. because anything further doesn't have the momentum or...
Yeah, it's better than doing nothing, which is what we're currently doing.
If the Green New Deal passed, addressing these things could be a lot easier to the general public because they would see the benefits. You would get the rural areas on board once they saw the jobs created, the well-paying jobs, because of rural poverty right now. They would be tremendously impacted in changing all the buildings and living conditions in these areas and being compensated fairly. I just think that's how we get to a point where you could actually address this.
Mm-hmm. And one analogy I've thought of is, are you familiar with basically the history of Easter Island?
Refresh my memory.
Well, essentially, Easter Island is that small island in the middle of the Pacific Ocean.
Mm-hmm.
I'm off the coast of South America that has those giant stone heads. I think they're called Moai.
Yeah,
and it's a, did I say 60 square mile? I think it's relatively about that size.
Uh-huh.
There was basically Eden.
Yeah.
So some number of Polynesian people rode their canoes over there. They settled. They go, oh, this is great. We have everything we need. They started cutting down trees. They built a society. It was incredible. Everyone was eating good. Everything they needed. At a certain point, and they probably didn't even realize it when they were doing it, they cut down one of the last trees, or the point of no return.
Yeah.
Where it might have not have been the actual last tree, but it was the one where they couldn't turn back from. And before they knew it, they were stuck on an island with no food and thousands of people on this tiny little rock. To their society completely dying out.
It's the real life Lorax.
Yeah, basically. I think that people need to view the globe on that scale.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason why we couldn't do that to ourselves on the globe scale.
Mm-hmm.
When you've cut down the last of your resources, now you don't have anything to get off.
Mm. Yeah, it's...
But they didn't know when the last tree they cut down, when they pushed it too far, until well past that. And I think that that might be how we're looking at climate change. We won't know that we've polluted the atmosphere so much that we can't turn back from it until well past that point.
Yeah. And the... program I was initially all on board with, but then you said something that I can't get out of my head. It was and the Citizens Climate Lobby, this is like their main piece of legislation they're backing is the carbon fee and dividend, where you would pay a dividend to all Americans based on a tax to carbon companies. But then you're right, there is the problem of then you incentivize carbon use, because people will like receiving money.
Yeah,
they receive by the companies profiting. So that is a dilemma, because you're going to have to
work out
some way that incentivizes doing the right thing to people.
Mm-hmm. And you want to work towards no carbon emissions, but if you're receiving money from those carbon emissions, well, all of a sudden...
So I haven't gotten a chance ask an expert on this at all. I was actually going to ask Paul Douglas when I was at his talk, but question time ran out. Because he backed it, but he's also a Republican. So I felt like he would have maybe had a good answer, but I didn't get a chance to ask him.
And I've asked a couple people, and I haven't got an answer that I'm really satisfied with.
Yeah, I hate it, because I loved that policy, because I love the idea of direct compensation for things. I think there needs to be more of that in general, just because of how people are struggling. There's not enough income going around in the working class, lower class, middle class. So I love ideas like this, because looks on the surface as two birds, one stone, two good things going on. But then you are creating people that are going to rely on this. And I don't know what the answer is yet.
Yeah, I mean, look at Alaska. I think the population gets something like $900 a year. And I might be wrong about that number. But it's not nearly as much as what they were talking about with the carbon tax and dividends or whatever.
Yeah.
And even there, talk about ending mining up in those regions. and they are not having it. Mm-hmm. They don't want to hear anything about that. They get their $900. They plan on using that on X, Y, or Z.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, it bothers me out. I like creative solutions to these problems, mm-hmm. and I just don't know. If you're a listener who's familiar with this and has an answer to that question, we love comments.
Yeah, comment at am950radio.com. I would love to know more about how you combat that dilemma of a great idea. Well, we might have some good news on this front. The man planning to cut down the entire rainforest, the most recent legitimate fascist to be elected, Jair Bolsonaro, he committed an impeachable offense by tweeting a gay porn video to his 3 million followers. So,
and that's an impeachable offense? I know, I'm sure it is based on the homophobic supporters that he has.
That's not why it's impeachable. It's impeachable because his Twitter is accessible and followed by so many children that a person sending lewd content to that many people is technically in Brazil illegal.
Interesting. It's illegal to distribute pornography to people in general or to children?
To children is what is...
Oh, specifically?
Yes, where he's going to get hung up and there's going to be trouble for him. So it's Carnival in Brazil, and on the night of Fat Tuesday, the president tweeted out, "I don't feel comfortable showing this, but we have to expose the truth to the population so it can have knowledge and always make the right priorities. This is what many Brazilian Carnival streets have become. Make your comments and draw your conclusion." So the post was accompanied by a cell phone video of undetermined origin of two men engaging in a sexual act. Okay, just for a moment, real life is so insane right now. I can never remember a time of the present day being just so ludicrous.
Yeah.
Every single day.
If these people weren't in positions of such incredible power, this would be hilarious.
Yeah. So, a newspaper in Brazil immediately pointed out that Bolsonaro had committed an impeachable crime by violating law number 1.079 of April 10th, 1950, the so-called impeachable law. The impeachable law details offenses which are punishable by immediate removal from office and banishment for 5 years of engagement in politics.
Oh, this is a specific law about the president?
Yeah, so although fiscal peddling... the budgetary infraction, which was used to excuse for impeaching Dilma Rousseff in 2016 and was legalized by the Senate 2 days later, does not appear in the list of impeachable crimes. Sharing pornography with children violates Article 9 of that law. This is literally written into the impeachment law of sharing pornography
with
children.
Why did they think that the president... We better have a law so that the president doesn't show children pornography.
I mean, what a blunder. And my God, please impeach this guy. He is the worst thing to be elected.
He is one of the scariest things in the world.
He is... I did a show early on when I started hosting on Thursdays about Bolsonaro and how the reason I never called Trump a fascist is in case anyone like this ever was elected. Because now we have a living, breathing.
Or was running, and then maybe the word fascist wouldn't mean so much. Like, no, there are sincere fascists out there.
This guy and
Trump is just a narcissist.
Duterte in the Philippines, they qualify.
Yeah. But I can't help but think that this is another situation that Trump gets himself into all the time. Which is, and quoting one of my favorite tweets of all time, "Well, I'd like to see Donnie Trump wriggle out of this jam." Trump easily wriggles out of the jam. Ah, well, nevertheless. And that's from Bronze Hammer on Twitter. But all the time they set up these situations, we're like, oh, we got him now. And then he immediately just ignores it.
Well, this one has some legs that the law is written so specifically.
Yeah, that is.
This one's going to be more challenging to him. I mean, think of this compared to like what we're hoping for in the Mueller investigation. Like even if things go right with that, it's still going to be an uphill battle. This is a clear violation that there's no way to get away from it. It's public. Everyone has seen it. There's record. This is going to be difficult for him. I too, though, don't know how much hope to put into it, just because we've seen so many people wiggle out of things that they shouldn't be able to.
And the thing about fascists is they normally ignore stuff like this in terms of the law. So it's not like he's playing by the rule book.
What the hell was he thinking?
Yeah, I want to see that rule book, because apparently they're very specific on the crimes that can get you impeached.
Of what? The Brazilian?
Yeah. It has to be a list of 10,000 items if they have that.
How did this one get written in there? Like, I mean, Latin America's pretty Christian and practicing. But was there an instance of the past? That I don't know. But the fact that it's written so specific leads me to believe that something must have happened at some level that they felt necessary to include this.
Yeah, or some time traveler.
Or their leaders just love tweeting gay porn all the time.
I guess. It was written in 1950, so maybe we had like a Philip K. Dick predictor of the future.
Sending out lewd materials by mail.
In the year 2100, there
will be... Mail on mail mail.
The year 2100, there will be a series of interconnected relays between houses.
So, man, that's a hoot. That's a hoot. What you got? You got anything on your list of illegible notes? Before you do that, last week or the week before, Eric went upstairs or something, and I saw his preparation for the show. And let's see.
I'd like to say, my notes are legible. I just cannot understand what I meant when I wrote them.
There was three things written. I can't remember. One I can't say, I know.
Is it about Bernie?
That I can say.
Oh, okay.
That's the one I remember. One of the notes was Bernie too thick. And then I thought there was one legitimate one, but I'm like, man, this guy works hard.
Yeah, I've got a similar page of notes right now.
Yeah, so back to your notes. You got on them? Okay. What's something you got?
One of the things is you were using the word clever as a noun during the Thursday show.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it is. I tried to look it up. I couldn't find any references to that. Just correcting your English.
Maybe it should be the buzzkills.
Mm-hmm. I've got something about eat to poo-poo, which is a funny YouTube video very similar to the Bolsonaro situation.
Oh, yeah.
In which a Nigerian preacher shows his congregation gay pornography on a projector.
Yeah, that was good. Explain that one a bit. That was good.
I believe it's a preacher who's addressing first the media and then his congregation at whole by showing them extreme examples of gay pornography and using it as a reason why homosexuality needs to be illegal. And he keeps saying that homosexuals eat to poo-poo.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Pastor Dr. Martin Semper. I've taken time to do a little research. Now, if we have any children, please step out. This is a parental guidance moment. And the other person is poo-pooing. And this one is eating the poo-poo all over the place.
As a human right to eat the poo-poo of other children.
Is obviously absurd and stupid, which is why it's funny. And then, let's see what I have else on my notes. Strutting that
What's that?
Yeah, you won't be strutting that.
Well, why is that a note?
When you're walking. I think it was just related to...
What's got you so mad today?
Me?
Yeah.
Because everybody wants to run. It's a chauvinistic pig attitude. That you're going to do something. You got a Benz, and you ain't got to walk every day, so you're going to get out and strut that. Strut that. Strut that. Strut that. Strut that. When you start walking, my friend, and you get 10 and 15 miles on the highway, you won't be strutting that.
I don't remember why I wrote that. Point being, I don't remember why I write these things. I just love that video.
Fantastic.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I know the rap song that's kind of like that.
I'll have to listen to that. Then I have Stealing Segways.
Oh, yeah, this was good, actually.
Which I read a bit about. I don't have the story here with me.
I mean, that's a story from Matt. Matt gets so furious about scooters and Segways. Oh, I know, scooters.
I don't get it when people were complaining about the scooters so much. That's fun as hell.
I know. I really don't have a problem. I let them rant and just go, okay, say whatever you want. I'm not going to join in with you.
The anti-fun police. I'm too old. I need to be upset by fun.
But going back to what we were talking about at the earlier part of the show, that video of the fentanyl rap and seeing those two, they're two young people in suits that clearly work for the pharmaceutical company. But that moment made me think, God, no wonder people hate millennials. This is such a millennial thing. And I was just like, I'm always sticking up for our generation, but I'm like,
yeah, why? We suck.
No, I lost a little bit of faith after watching that.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, you know, people who try to distance themselves from maybe their white privilege, mm-hmm. by being like, oh, white people are so lame. And it's like, well, you know you're white, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then you'll see white people just doing something so egregious that you kind of have to join on, like, yeah, we suck. We're bad.
Oh, yeah. There's plenty of those. Oh, mm-hmm. man. And the suburban psychosis I see a lot, too. Mm-hmm. It is becoming almost the season of suburban psychosis, because as soon as it warms up, you will start seeing your neighbors in the suburbs just get angry at people existing nearby them.
Yeah.
They don't know what they're getting angry at.
That's how I feel about the scooters.
About people interpreting the scooters?
Yeah. Get angry about it for their refined reasons to be angry about it.
I completely agree.
Or pedal pubs. People cannot necessarily describe why they're bad, but I'll tell you, they know that they're bad.
Yeah.
It is very corny and dumb.
Very corny and dumb.
Which is one of those white activities.
The type of people that partake in them, I'm not a big fan of.
Yeah, but I mean, it's people having fun.
Yeah. No, I am with you on that one, even though I would never take part in a pedal pub. Choosing to plan an activity, the pedal pub is near the very bottom.
Oh, yeah. I totally agree. Especially when you find out the details, like, you have to bring your own liquor.
And
it's super hard to pedal. And it's like, well, why are you doing that then? Just bring bikes or something.
That's what I don't get, too, with everyone into marathons and that. It's like, you pay to go run this long distance. It's like,
they're not providing anything except, like, a beginning and end.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like $100, $200 to go run several miles. I'm like, what's in this for me at all?
You know, my main criticism of marathons, they start too early. Start at like 6 in the morning.
Yeah.
So then people are done by at least 10. What do you have to do later in the day after you ran a marathon?
To rest.
I guess. Who's the, I got to go do all my work after the marathon.
I know. What do you need the time in the day for?
I have to go work out. I have to do my laundry.
So my marathon idea was the cigarette smoker 5K. And I think that could have legs.
Yeah. Because
people love their marathons for their selfies and Instagram to show off that they're doing a marathon. But an ironic marathon, like repping smoking cigarettes during your run, I think that's a way to stand out from the crowd of these stupid marathons.
Yeah, maybe that'll be our first event.
Yeah, a sponsored event of the Mission Accomplishers. When you finish, you accomplish the mission.
I'll have to take up smoking and running.
I know, man. You got to pick up two of the worst things in the world.
What I love, though, is when people are extremely skilled or accomplished at something, even though they do behaviors that seem counterproductive to that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, when someone has a very unhealthy lifestyle, but for whatever reason, they're still extremely good at so-and-so sport.
Yeah.
Like how Usain Bolt won all his gold medals while in China, while also only eating chicken McNuggets.
Is that true?
He would eat like 60 chicken McNuggets a day, and that's all he'd eat.
And he's
for like a month straight.
No argument, the best, too. Yeah. Like, it's a discernible fact.
Where it's like, yeah, you can do some stuff to help you out, but you're never going to be Usain Bolt.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know that about him.
Or, like, fat and lazy Shaquille O'Neal is probably my favorite basketball player.
Yeah.
Because the man who's barely trying is still completely dominant.
I love when Shaquille O'Neal, the strategy against him was just to foul him because he couldn't make free throws. It's like, you are a professional basketball player who can't make the easiest shot in basketball, the uncontested shot. And that was team strategy. So
always
he'd
the
shoot
same
like
distance.
60, and he didn't get better at it. It took like a year, like an entire season, and he finally started catching on where it wasn't the effective strategy. But that was hilarious that teams, one thought of that and then went through with it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
It's like, we're not going to try to actually play against him. We'll just make him take chances at extra points.
Mm-hmm. I had the same girlfriend that won the ASAP Rocky prize package that I didn't get to claim. Her sister would run literally every single day 26 miles.
Whoa.
That is insane. No person should do that.
I couldn't imagine doing that activity every day or at all.
Yeah.
Running 26 just because of how hard it would be, but also the time constraint.
Oh, I know. She has to wake up at like 4 or 5 in the morning just to have enough time to run.
A huge amount of your day. I have to watch TV for 5-6 hours a day, and I don't have time for running. All right, then to kind of close out the show, do you want to talk about the Ilhan Omar situation? A lot of other people have talked about it already. I don't know if a different take than everyone else.
What are your thoughts?
It's just that most of the Democratic supporters who have came out in support of her are only doing so after the congressional reprimanding was canceled. So they're very happy to support her after they know that they don't have to address it in front of everyone or be held accountable for that opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Once they know that it's a safe opinion, they're all ready to line up for her. And it's just, I think, an indictment of what a lot of Democrats' strategies have been, which is to say, look, we're so multicultural, we're so expansive, look at all the women and people of color we have in the Democratic Party now. But at the same time, they were so quick to go after her for the smallest thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're willing to completely abandon all these policies or positions that they claim to support, but it seems like they really only support them as a marketing strategy.
Yeah. I think it's ironic with Israel and anti-Semitism how the left is getting accused of this, whereas in the right, they really have the huge problem of the right wing is either very pro-Israel or extremely anti-Semitic.
And often they are both.
I know, and that never makes sense.
Like Richard, well, it kind of does because a lot of the like white nationalist groups, I mean, it's in the word, nationalist. Someone like Richard Spencer is a big supporter of Israel because he believes in the concept of ethnostates. Mm-hmm. They say, well, we don't want any Jews over here in America. We want them to have a separate country where they can all go.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll support Israel as a state. I don't know if he supports us funding it.
Mm-hmm. But it's, and then in all of the right-wing online communities, it's all just constant anti-Semitic memes and
And the kind that are actually insidious, not criticisms of a right-wing lobbying group that is in favor of
They are horrible, and they're extremely offensive. It's, I look at all this stuff, but sometimes when I look at them, I don't know, I like lose faith in people. I'm like, oh, really? This is what you guys are spreading?
Yeah. Well, I'm a member of Deplorable Family Members of Police, so you can imagine the cool memes they have over there.
I'm in QAnon Follow the White Rabbit, and
That's a good one. That can be a whole episode.
Yeah. It's crazy that how much actual fake news they spread. Like, they spread clearly websites that don't even exist that are only a headline, and it doesn't even go to an article, and there'll be 300 comments of everyone thinking the headline is true.
It's amazing how little.
I'm like, all you guys have to do is click it, and you would see that this isn't like an actual news story of any sort. And you guys are the ones screaming fake news the loudest, too.
Yeah. I mean, fake news started out as a describer of those exact things.
Mm-hmm.
Fake Facebook articles. And then Donald Trump heard his list. Oh, that's a great word.
You know, on that, I actually knew when I lived in New York, someone who, he was an artist, and he made a project that was a make your own fake news article to share on social media. And he now that site has been shut down and is illegal, but he did this like 2013 or something, way before any of this. It was early on in that we were using Facebook to spread news articles because it wasn't as prevalent even like 5 years ago as it is today. So because it was, the format wasn't always there, you would share a link and it would just be a link, but then they started incorporating the pictures of articles. But he actually made the original fake news generator, and it got shut down, completely taken out. Like, he got in legal trouble for it even.
Wow.
And you would love this guy because now he works for Kanye West.
Very cool. What does he do for him?
It's like the artist direction stuff.
Okay.
And the other thing he did was make a Russian Make America Great Again hat that Kanye West wears nowadays.
Like written in acrylic?
Yeah, yeah.
Hmm.
But Kanye saw it on his Instagram and goes, I need one of those. I saw the comment from him.
Yeah. I wonder where that switch happened in Facebook's history. Because remember when it first started, the status bar would always say, your name is blank. And it'd be more descriptive.
Hunter Haas is happy or something like that.
Yeah, and you would write something.
That was
something.
What statuses were.
Go into the store.
Because when you look back on, if you go to Facebook memories, you'll notice if you got any of those like 2007, 2008, 2009, your statuses are all written strange because it was framed that way.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't make as much sense as your most recent memories. Yeah.
I think it's when Facebook says, oh, we're going to crack down on fake news. It's like, how? I honestly don't know how they would do it. Is it websites they're allowed to share articles from? Because people are not going to be happy about that.
Good question.
Yeah. I've not yet heard it described. It's like, oh, we're going to play with the algorithm. I don't know. Who, maybe like decide who can advertise or not. I know that
they have shut down on that. You have to, if you're a political campaign,
yeah, exactly,
confirm that you're an actual candidate. So there are ways, but I mean, you're right. I mean, so they do have a way that, like, you can't share a pornography video on Facebook. Somehow they know where the links are coming from, and they block.
Is that
those.
True? Yeah. I've never tried, so
that's why you don't ever see any.
Yeah, well, I know spam bots and stuff.
It could appear shortly, but it will immediately get taken down.
Mm-hmm. And that's not by reporting. It's like algorithmically.
Yeah.
I guess there's like, you know, the big Pornhub or whatever.
Those
big domains.
That would get blocked.
Interesting.
So there are ways, but then there's so much like new media, small websites, personal blogs.
And the sharers of this fake news or these right-wing articles that are just making stuff up, like Q stories. The thing is, they like it, and they're one of the biggest markets for Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll say, like, yeah, we should get rid of fake news. We should do that. But
they want to get rid of CNN. That's what they consider fake news.
Mm-hmm. Which I'm fine with that. CNN is awful.
But it's a ridiculous argument.
Yeah, of course.
CNN, compared to these other things, is what is spreading the false information.
Blatantly false news stories.
Before we go, I wanted to let everyone know that there is actually a backlog of shows available online. So go to the AM950 SoundCloud page, and we've got like 6-7 weeks of content. We will be releasing exclusive content on there that isn't broadcast here Saturdays at 7 p.m.
After dark.
So Subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcast. Go to am950radio.com and check out our archives. We got a lot of goodies for you. So, anything else before we go?
Just a couple of corrections from things I got incorrectly earlier in the show. I'm sure I'm missing 99% of them. So please reach out to me and correct any inaccuracy you might have heard at enelson@am950radio.com. Or also just give me and Hunter some thoughts and ideas on what you want the show to be. This is brand new. We're just starting, and we're still kind of finding ourselves. But the Eat the Poo Poo preacher was from Uganda, not Nigeria. And Alaska's dividend was about $2,000 this year per individual, not the $900 I originally said. Also, once again, I'd like to encourage people to go out and find the Deep Adaptation paper. I found it through a simple Google search of, just like I said, Deep Adaptation. It's not too long. You can probably read it in a good half hour. There is also an audio version of a person reading it out loud, and it comes into a little over an hour, which as an academic paper, it's actually surprisingly readable. I think some of the criticisms it had was that it was maybe too flowery of language used to describe the awful, hellish conditions that we can all expect to see in the next couple of years. And as a final note, Google Murray Bookchin.
And as always, remember, prosecute the Bush administration for war crimes. We're coming for you, bastards.